welcome back to Yellow Bee Pod, your podcast all about East and Southeast Asian stories. I'm your host, Natalie Chung. I'm British-born Chinese and based in London. And thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you're new to the podcast or you're not already following us on social media, find me at Yellow Bee Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And I love chatting to listeners and finding out who's on the other side of this podcast. Thank you so much to everyone who found the last episode hilarious. I sat down with my younger sisters, and yes to everyone asking, yes, I have three younger sisters. All four of us sat down together and we spoke about our Asian upbringing, the sibling fights that we had growing up, basically lots of relatable and funny content. And in the last few days, I've been posting on social media about after school tuition, specifically Kumon. I absolutely love the comments that we've had about it. The most hilarious ones, actually, which my sisters really related to, are the people who, oh, maybe I should say what Kumon is first. So Kumon, they have, it's like a after school rote learning math and English tuition, and it seems like quite a lot of us did this. And it seems like quite a few of us used to tear off pages of the worksheets and hide them so we wouldn't have to do so much work. And shout out to another British Asian podcaster called Steph. She says, oh my god, Kumon, I used to rip off the back pages and hide them behind the piano. And one day, my mum moved the piano to clean and thousands of papers fell out. I could not stop laughing at this. This is so, so funny. Also because I feel like piano and maths Kumon are two really stereotypical Asian things. I can just imagine the scene of the piano being moved and then loads of Kumon worksheets just falling out on top of her mum. If you missed the conversation, that was happening on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Yellow Bee Pod. I've also been posting about the concept of yit hei. So that's like a Cantonese term. It's a Chinese medicine concept that I kind of grew up with and I kind of understand, but not completely. So I really appreciate everyone, basically people who are more Chinese than me, letting me know. Especially because in the last episode, episode 14, if you haven't listened to it, go back and download it so you can listen to it after this one. My sister Jessica, in that episode, she was saying how yit hei is a concept that she wants to pass on to her future children, but we actually really struggle to define it in Western terms. So thanks to everyone else for doing that to help us. And through this podcast, I'm so grateful because I'm really learning a lot about Chinese culture, and that helps me with my own Chinese identity, my own Asian identity. And I saw a really great post from More Than Asian on Instagram, which has, it's a photo series and photo profiles, but this specific one, there was an Asian American guy with loads of boxes around him, so cardboard boxes like the ones you would use if you were moving house, and the picture, I think it was set up to look like he was moving house, like packing cardboard boxes into a car, and each box had a different label on it. You can read the full story on More Than Asian's page. It's Alvin Kwong, Don't Box Me In, that's the title of it. And so he has all these different boxes that have labels on them, like Chinese, another box says first generation, another box says American, another box says gay. And it got me thinking about what labels I would use to define myself, like what is my identity? And I guess the ones I would use are British, Chinese, Malaysian, because part of my heritage comes from Malaysia, and I think that's something important that I lean into. But yeah, definitely British and Chinese would be the first ones. And this is part of sort of the same identity crisis that I've had when people say, I'm not real Chinese because I don't really understand yit hei, or because I didn't grow up with celebrating Chinese festivals, etc. And I've heard this from people genuinely saying to me that I'm not, you know, Chinese enough, or I'm not real Chinese. And I even say it about myself. And that includes when I compare myself to people who are British born Chinese as well. So I can understand, yeah, I might not know as much about Chinese culture as someone who is from a predominantly Chinese country and grew up there. But even when I'm compared to other British born Chinese people, I feel like I'm not Chinese enough. But I am. I'm 100% Chinese and Chinese enough, even if I'm not from China. And I get a similar thing with British. So when someone says, you don't look British, I got this a lot when I was traveling in Southeast Asia, actually. So, you know, people ask you where you're from. I tell them I'm from the UK. And they say that I don't look British, or I don't look like I'm from England, because apparently their imagination just can't stretch to imagine that there are non-white people from the UK, or, you know, that there's Asian people like them, because the people who are saying this were Asian, they can't imagine that there's Asian people like them who are not from Asia. So in terms of like thinking about which labels I'm confident to put in on myself, I've really come on a journey to be proud to call myself British and Chinese, and British Chinese together. So how do you feel about that? Do you call yourself Asian? Do you call yourself by a certain ethnicity or nationality? And if you live in the UK, do you call yourself British? And does that depend on your citizenship? Does that depend on how long you've been here? And what other labels do I use to describe myself? I would use, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, I'm a sister. And then there's plenty of labels that I also could use but actually don't think about. So things like, I'm cisgender, which means that my gender identity matches the sex that I was given at birth. And I guess that's almost like a position of privilege, where cisgender for many people is considered default, so I don't actually have to think about that as a special label. And there's other labels where I'm not 100% clear if I fit into the box. Like I said that I am Malaysian, but I'm definitely British. There might be Malaysian people who say that I'm not Malaysian. I don't know, I'm a bit confused just thinking about it, but I'm definitely British and I'm definitely Chinese. And I'm really interested to know what sort of labels you would use to describe yourself. So please get in touch and let me know at yellowbeepod on Instagram, Twitter. You can also email me yellowbeepod@gmail.com. So if someone was to ask you to define yourself, or, you know, give an elevator pitch on yourself, a quick two-line summary of your identity, what would you say? But actually, not if someone asked you, because right now I'm asking you, what are your labels? And we all have different labels that we can use, and sometimes different facets of ourselves that we might show more in different situations. So in this post from @morethanasian, there's also some boxes with labels that have been crossed out, like bisexual and bottom. Wink, wink. I have to say that because you can't see that I'm winking. And maybe I'm reading too much into this. I guess there's also labels that we have used in the past to describe ourselves, which we no longer use. So if I think about the labels that I've used in the past for myself but don't use anymore, well, I really had to think about this. And I think one of them would be my job or my field of study. And I don't think that we should define ourselves by our job. But for years, I described myself as an engineering student and then as an engineer when I graduated and started working. But since then, I've changed career. I no longer work as an engineer. And pretty soon, I will have been working not as an engineer, just as long as I've worked as an engineer. So should I still call myself an engineer? I don't know. What do you think? Another label that I don't really use, but I used to be proud to use actually, is banana and whitewashed. And we've talked about this in previous episodes. I think it's episode 11, Get to Know Me. Someone asked me what fruit I would be and I said I'm a banana. So banana is someone who sort of might look Chinese on the outside but is very culturally white or English on the inside. So like a banana is yellow on the outside, white on the inside. And I used to say that quite a lot, like, oh, I don't know that, I'm whitewashed. I don't know that thing about Asian culture, I'm whitewashed. Almost as an excuse or a reasoning for not knowing something or not understanding something. And I'm not really proud of it anymore, and it's not really a label that I want to use. So maybe if I had that cardboard box, I would have a box that says, you know, whitewashed banana, but crossed out. And I used to describe myself as a nerd, but now I don't even know if I have nerdy enough interests or hobbies to be a nerd anymore. I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too much into this, because to be honest, most of these labels are ones that have been put on me. Not things I have created for myself, but they're things that have been put on me and I start to lean into it. And sometimes I lean into it because I want to fit in, because I want to find my community. So if I describe myself as Asian, then I'll be able to lean into the wider Asian community and be accepted there. But again, most of these labels have been put on me rather than me picking them for myself. And it shouldn't really be like that. It doesn't have to be like that. And that's why I started this whole podcast. Yellow Bee Pod is all about Asian culture and identity and more. And identity is a really, really big word there. I really think that we all choose our own identity, and you are who you are. There's no need to overthink it, even though I'm still talking about this. But yeah, taking it back to the post, don't box me in. So don't box me in, don't label me, take a bat, swing it, knock down all those boxes. If they're limiting you, that is, you can get rid of all those labels. I don't want to be labeled, I don't want to be put in a box. And neither do you. You don't need to fit into a stereotype. I mean, that is the name of the post, don't box me in. But yeah, there's quite a few individuals profiled on that page, More Than Asian. Check out their beautiful photo profiles. And they also have written interviews, so longer form interviews on their website. And they've recently started doing Instagram TV videos. And you might see your girl, Natalie, me, on there soon. Wink, wink again. And while you are checking out More Than Age on Instagram, follow Yellow Bee Pod. I post my story every damn day and I ask questions. I share listener comments on my Instagram story. So if you're not following on there yet, don't miss out. And we're also just under 1,000. So we're probably going to hit 1,000 followers on Instagram pretty soon. So the whole thing with labels, and the reason I've been thinking about it so much recently, is because the 12th of August every year is International Youth Day, and this episode is an International Youth Day special. And I was thinking, do I count as youth? Do I count as a young person now? And here is a perfect example of a label that has been put on me, because growing up, I guess when you're a teenager, it's pretty obvious you're a young person, you're a youth. I don't think anyone would dispute that. But it was a label that's been put on me while I've been an adult as well. And it's something that I feel like I don't fit into anymore. So it was a label that was mostly put on me by, you know, non-profit charities, other organisations that I was part of. And maybe if I was put up for something like an award or a grant bursary or a scholarship, or I attended an event that was for, quote, young people, and I would, you know, make the most of that. And sometimes they put age guidance of what they define as a young person. But now I feel like I don't fit into it anymore because I'm getting older. And regardless of how I feel, if I don't fit into the age range that they have on their website or whatever, then, I mean, I just don't fit into it. So the United Nations defines, quote, youth as people between the age of 15 and 24, but some UN member states say it's up to age of 30. But yeah, a young person was a label that was put on me that I guess maybe is another one that I would put on a cardboard box, but then cross out. Again, maybe I'm overthinking it and it actually doesn't really matter. As today's International Youth Day special, I want to give some stats. So there are 1.2 billion young people aged 15 to 24 in the world. That makes up 16% of the global population. And I think that's actually increasing, particularly on certain continents, because there are so many more people being born than there were more than 30 years ago. The UN has their sustainable development goals that they want to achieve by 2030. And by 2030, the number of youth, so 15 to 24 year olds, the number of youth is predicted to grow by 7% to 1.3 billion. That's a lot of people. Despite that, young people aren't really included in big decisions. So for example, in government, actually decisions on all levels, whether it's local, national or global. And I think that's a bit of a problem because it's such a big part of the global population. Plus, there's so much stuff in the UK about, oh, younger people need to go out to vote, otherwise it's the older generations who are making decisions for young people, and older generations won't even be around to see all the changes. And they're voting for things that a lot of young people wouldn't agree with. That sort of conversation comes out with every election or poll in the UK. But I mean, young people are involved, even if they're not really included in big decisions. Young people are definitely involved. Young people still drive a huge amount of change. And I'm really lucky to have met some amazing young people, including this episode's guest, who really drive change through like civic engagement in their own communities, but also like globally. Like Greta Thunberg is a perfect example of that. As a really, really high profile young person, she's still a teenager, and she has driven so much change globally and really push the conversation on climate change. So last year, you would have seen this on socials if you follow us. Last year I had the opportunity to speak at a ginormous youth event. It was held right here in London, which is really cool because it had guests and attendees from literally all over the world. And that event was also where I connected with and had the opportunity to meet this episode's guest, Louisa Aquino. So it was a YMCA event, you know, like the song YMCA. And it's the largest and oldest youth charity and youth movement in the world, and it started in the UK, so that's why the event was in London. Everyone knows the YMCA from the song, but it's much more than a song. Last year, they were celebrating their 175th year. So the YMCA started in London 175 years ago. Well, 176 now. And it's pretty much in every country and around the world. And at this event, they had representatives from YMCAs, young leaders, and also leaders of some of the biggest charities in the world. And I met so many inspirational young people, like, I really think that event changed my life when I think back to it. So yeah, it was this time last year and I got the opportunity through a charity that I've worked with called YCare International. So I volunteered in a YMCA in Togo in West Africa a couple of years back and I'm still involved with the charity now as much as I can. They're a youth and international development charity, YCare International. And thank you so much to the staff at that charity because they were the one who nominated me for the opportunity to actually be a keynote speaker at this huge commemorative event last summer. So they nominated me as a, you know, quote, young person. See, they put that label on me and I sent in a video audition and actually got the opportunity. So the opportunity was to be a keynote speaker and also to have coaching from TED. As in TED Talks, so not one man called TED, but the organisation. They had partnered with YMCA to coach and mentor the speakers like myself. And I just, I'm so grateful that I put myself up for it because I remember when the charity nominated me and I was thinking like, oh God, I wouldn't have put myself up for this. Not in a million years would I have put myself up for that. But they nominated me because they saw something in me. And like the video audition, I remember filming it, staying back at work late to film it in one of the meeting rooms. Amazing opportunity to work with some of the TED staff from the US. In 2019, a New Year's resolution for that year was actually to become better, to become more confident at public speaking. And maybe that's something that I'll talk a little bit more about in a future episode because I really feel like I changed a lot. I learned a lot in 2019 and actually beyond. I hope that's something I can keep improving on. I think public speaking is such an important skill, not just for sharing your own story and advocating for those in other groups. And it's good for your career. It's good in your personal life as well. Like if you have to do a speech at a wedding or something, it's just a good skill to have. So yeah, I attended this event, which was called YMCA 175. I don't think I mentioned that. I was a TED Ed keynote speaker. I was also a workshop facilitator. So I think gaining experience in public speaking is really about, for me, putting myself out of my comfort zone. And the workshop that I facilitated at this event was about the role of faith in civic engagement and the sustainable development goals. And talking about faith is completely out of my comfort zone. I'm not religious myself. I didn't grow up in a religious household. I was really, really out of my comfort zone to be doing a talk and then also chairing a panel where the panelists sort of represented different religious organizations. Yeah, so the workshop was all about how young people can affect change and have a global impact and how these initiatives can be, are linked to faith or grounded in religious values, which was really interesting for me to learn about as well. But yeah, I'm not religious myself. Maybe that's another label that I've considered and put on a box, but then crossed out. I really, really appreciated the opportunity. And maybe you're thinking, like YMCA, it stands for Young Men's Christians Association, but you don't have to be Christian to be involved. And you don't need to be young, actually, or a man. I don't know. I think the name has stuck, though, because it's so well known now. I really don't feel like I'm giving this topic justice because I really, really believe in youth power. And I hope we're all on the same page that young people should have all the opportunities to be the best selves, including access to healthcare and access to education and employment opportunities. Like all of these things are so important for young people, for everyone. And this episode's guest is a great example of someone who is a youth leader, like hashtag youth power. So I'll read a little bit from her bio from her website. Louisa is a motivational speaker and social activist passionate about youth empowerment, advocating for human rights and mental health awareness. She's a co-founder and executive director of Leaders of Today Canada, a youth nonprofit focused on youth empowerment and leadership. She's also president and founder of a youth-led mental health nonprofit organization, Peace of Mind Canada. So Peace of Mind Canada is an organization which she started when she was so young. Keep listening to find out how young she was because honestly, I think it will surprise you. And we met at YMCA 175 event last summer and she did a really important keynote speech, sort of more important than mine. It was about mental health and sharing some of her story, which was really, really touching and striking and so memorable. I'll include a YouTube link to her speech in the show notes. And in this episode, we're talking about mental health. I know it is a sensitive topic for many, and we also touch on the topic of suicide. So I want to put a big content warning, trigger warning here, if that's a topic that's particularly sensitive to you. Absolutely no pressure to listen to this episode. Just want to give you a heads up, and this episode will still be here if it isn't right for you to listen at this time, but you want to revisit it in the future. So we talk about her experience, public speaking. Louisa is also Filipino-Canadian, and we talk about her experiences talking about mental health in her Filipino community. Actually, before I get into it, I want to ask you guys a question, because a question that's a bit off topic. So I actually was supposed to visit Canada this month, and I think I'm supposed to be there right now. Yeah, I wanted to visit Toronto and DC, but I think that trip is going to have to be another year. But I still have a holiday booked for next month. I think I'm supposed to be leaving in exactly a month's time. I see on my Instagram that loads of people on holiday right now, you know, in some Greek villa or in Ibiza. Like, what's the general consensus? Are we allowed to be going on holiday now, or is it a good idea to be going on holiday now? I don't want to get trapped out there or have to quarantine to come back. So I'm going to Zambia. I haven't sorted out all the arrangements, but my flights are still booked and I can't get a full refund, although I can get a travel voucher, but I don't know whether I'll use that in the next year or two or however long it lasts. So I'd love your opinions on this. Are you going on holidays this summer? With everything that's going on, I really can't get my head around what's happening. And even though my friend who I booked with has cancelled her flights and got the travel voucher, I'm still thinking about going. I really, really want to go, but I just feel like it's kind of a bad idea. Please help me. Anyway, let's get back on topic, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Louisa. Of course, mental health is such an important conversation to have, and this episode is not the only time we'll be talking about mental health on this podcast. I'll also be looking for podcast guests of East or Southeast Asian descent in the future to be talking about mental health, as well as a whole range of other topics. And I'm always keen to hear topic ideas. So keep on messaging me, slide in my DMs, drop me an email. Love to hear from you. Please enjoy my conversation with Louisa. She is a superstar. And we get right into it, talking about the event that we met at and her public speaking experience.
So my experience was once in a lifetime for sure. It was one of the best weeks of my life, and it was one of the most powerful speeches I was able to deliver because of the size of the audience. When you have a few thousand young people from across the world and you're able to talk about something that is globally stigmatized, the opportunity to talk about something that makes human beings uncomfortable, but also knocking down that barrier where it might stop us from having conversation because of the lack of awareness or education or conversation we have in our everyday lives, just being presented that opportunity to really introduce the topic of mental health to start off the day was definitely something that is memorable for me and I will remember for a lifetime for sure. I remember the stage and how everybody looked when I asked the first question, "Do you know anybody who was died by suicide?" And when the people stood, I really was not expecting that many people to stand at that first question, which is additionally why I had those two other questions afterwards, because I didn't think a majority of people would be standing after the first question. So when I saw that, you could kind of see in the video as well, like I froze for a second with just like disbelief that, oh my goodness, this many people have met someone or known someone that has died by suicide. And in this room with thousands of young people, just seeing that, and having that actual visualization that's available for everybody in that room and people in the live stream across the world, it was something that was one of the most powerful parts of any speech I've ever delivered, any keynote I've ever delivered, or any presentation I've ever delivered. Mm. It's been since then one of the, I guess, memorable presentations for me, because afterwards I was able to meet so many young people and all of them came up to me sharing their stories, and every single one basically started with, "I've never told anybody this before, but," and then proceeded to tell me their story.
Oh, wow. That must have been absolutely phenomenal, but also a significant pressure.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of emotional moments throughout that weekend. Because when somebody tells you their story for the first time, it gets you in a certain way, because you realize that this fellow young person has kept something to themselves their whole lives,
yeah,
that they haven't told their friends, that they haven't told their families. And the ability to be that person where they feel comfortable enough to tell a random stranger, this is what I went through. Thank you, because I've gone through the same thing, or I felt lost in a certain situation. It's just that ability to be that outlet, even if it's for 3-4 minutes on the side of one of the rooms or even in the halls. It was just a life-changing experience to really see the power of conversation and to be able to see how much conversation can react in like a domino effect, where you just see other young people starting to talk about mental health, or you see them posting about it on their Instagram, or even posting quotes from what I said. And just the ability to even take that conversation and take it onto a different platform, for me was definitely another life-changing moment as well.
Yeah, I feel like we've gone right into it, and I would love to get you to share your story, which you've told many times, if you felt comfortable to, later in this conversation. And I said it was a large audience. I think that was kind of understating it. It was ginormous, you're right. Thousands of young people who are leaders and activists in their communities from, I think, pretty much every country of the world was represented in that audience. I remember like looking out from the stage as well. I didn't ask such a stark question as you did. I think my question was a slightly different question. But I do remember looking out into the audience and seeing everyone's faces, and also feeling really, really nervous in the weeks leading up to the event and my speech. Did you feel nervous as well?
Oh, for sure. I was like super, super confident up until the moment they called my name, and I was like, shoot, like, what am I really doing? At the time, I was 19 years old. Now I'm 20 and I'm turning 21, but just having a stage that large and an audience that big and from a diverse audience, it was something that not a lot of 19-year-olds get to experience these days. So I remember being scared and thinking, okay, like every single time I speak, I'm not just representing myself. I'm representing the Filipino community, young women, mental health activists, those who are struggling with their mental health, those who are silenced from their struggles, those who don't have their voices. I'm representing Canada when I'm at the YMCA 175. I'm representing Toronto when I'm at YMCA 175. And most importantly, like, you're representing your family, right? And so you're up there and you're thinking, okay, let's not mess this up. Like, you've done this before. Like, let's just not mess this up. But a lot of people don't know that the whole keynote and the whole speech was finalized like 30 minutes before I went on stage.
Oh, really? What led to the last minute changes?
So I worked a full-time job last summer, so I didn't have much time to write anything to begin with. I kept drafting things up, but it just felt so like forced and so staged. So I was like, you know what? Like, I work best under pressure. I'll do it on the plane. So I get on plane and I'm like, okay, like, this is fine, like a 6-hour flight. So I finish it within like 2-3 hours, or we land in London, and then my whole family does this city hopping or whatever in like London or in Europe. And the day before YMCA 175, I realized, holy crap, like, I hate this. Like, I hate what I wrote. Like, I think it's completely forced again. Like, I think I could do so much better. So I ended up booking a hotel room across the city from where my family was staying, stayed in there all alone for a whole night just to rewrite it. And then I finished half of it, and I finished the second half the day after, since we were on, I believe, like the 6th or the 7th. So I just ended up writing the whole thing, or majority of the whole keynote, the next day, leading into the morning of the day that we were supposed to speak. So it was completely nerve-wracking. Which took up a lot of my time, because I needed to make sure that it was the right message that I wanted to deliver. I wanted to make sure it was powerful, that I was utilizing all the minutes I had on stage, that I was taking advantage of this opportunity that not many people get to talk about mental health. So many things to take into consideration, that when I finally did it, I was like I didn't have time to be stressed out beforehand, because I was like, okay, like, I just have to go. I have to get ready. I have to do my makeup. I need to go. So the only time I really had to freak out was when I was walking from backstage stage, and I just looked at everyone. I did not think it was going to be that scary. I don't normally get scared of large crowds, but I've also not spoken in front of thousands of young people since like 2015. It's not something that I'm typically used to. And I just remember like my legs were shaking behind the podium, and just like, I was just trying to smile everything off, like fake it till I made it. But the response from the audience and their attention in general was something that really boosted my confidence. So it was really nice to have such an amazing group of young people from, again, like 170-something countries all in front of me. So I really wanted to take that opportunity and use it to the best of my ability to learn something for myself and to provide a learning opportunity for other young people.
Yeah, I definitely had a similar experience, although mine was a little bit different. I was nervous in the weeks coming up to it, but actually on the day I wasn't nervous at all, even though I had attended the opening ceremony the evening before, so I had seen the size of the audience and had been part of the large audience. And I remember sitting backstage thinking like, wait, is it actually today? Because I don't feel nervous. And I remember like the president of the UN General Assembly, who was also a keynote on the same day that I spoke, she walked into the green room in the back and I was just sitting there like, why am I so calm? Like, am I really here? So for me, it was sort of the opposite. I like also procrastinated writing my speech for ages because I was so nervous for me. But then I wasn't actually nervous on the day. For me as well, I was able to connect with a lot of young people afterwards. And mine is perhaps not so broad and not so personal. But I had a lot of young women and also the person who is the lead of YMCA in Australia come up to me and said they also experienced being the only girl in their maths or physics class, which is a story that I shared. But anyway, today's not about me. It's about you.
Love your story. It was awesome. I remember watching it as I was getting ready that day. So it was a really good one. I hope that people get a chance to listen to it as well.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link to Louise's speech from YMCA 175 in the show notes below.
Put your link as well.
Maybe. I actually haven't watched the whole thing back.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I remember on the day thinking, okay, this is a big audience. It's also being live streamed and will be on the internet forever. Let's just forget about that second part and focus on the audience that's in front of me.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was that part, the live stream part got me too. I was like, well, if I mess up, other people around the world will see it forever. So let's just... Oh, and also, I guess I didn't mention this, but I actually lost my voice 2-3 days
before. Oh my God, were you sick? Oh no.
Yeah, my friends got me sick.
Blame your friends.
They really did get me sick, both of them. I said, stay away from me, and they just did not stay away from me. So I lost 2-3 days before I left for the whole trip. And it was just like, it would come back. And then it would go, and then it would come back, and then it would go. And then I was like, okay, like, this has to come back now. Like, that's why, like, I stayed in the room. I didn't do anything. I drank, like, tea. I stayed in. I was like, I'm not seeing anyone. Like, I'm not going to talk. I'm just going to do this, get the speech over, and it's done. But after that, my voice was gone. Like, my voice is gone for weeks after. But it was all worth it at the end of the day, for sure.
Yeah, well, you delivered really well and it still had the impact, even if you were like coming down with something.
Thank you.
What inspired you to become a mental health activist and to start your nonprofit?
So when I was 9 years old, I believe, I was kind of exploring in the world social activism. But
at nine?
At nine, yeah. I didn't even know I had no idea what it was called, though. Like, I just knew that I wanted to start a fundraiser for victims of a typhoon in the Philippines that struck when I was in fifth grade. So I decided that I wanted to collect non-perishable food items and donations and clothing and send them over to the Philippines. And so when I realized that that was social activism, I realized that this was something I really liked doing. So from fifth grade all the way to 10th grade, social activism through human rights and through child rights was something that was super interesting to me, particularly access education. But when I got to 10th grade, it shifted significantly after I lost one of my best friends to suicide. And his suicide was one of four high school student suicides that happened in Winnipeg within the time span of 1 month. And so a city as small as Winnipeg, you can kind of imagine how that struck the whole community and how that struck the city. And how it struck high school students. So I decided to create my own nonprofit organization called Peace of Mind Canada. And the whole goal that Peace of Mind Canada had was to eradicate stigma surrounding mental health through providing platforms and safe environments for young people to share their stories and experiences, because mental health isn't a topic that we get to talk about every single day in classrooms, in our homes, or with our friends. It's still very heavily stigmatized. So just providing that ability for young people to have this platform to share their stories was something that I think was missing. To me, suicide is 100% preventable. It's something that we're able to talk about, but we have to be proactive and we have to be mindful of other people and things that they're going through. And we also have to be mindful that we all go through things at some point of our lives. And I think that within my age group at the time, we were very, I guess, like, it was in, right when Instagram and Facebook was dying and we were all just always on our phones and all that stuff, we were comparing our lives to other people's, and we were doing things for the gram. We were doing different things for the wrong reasons, especially within the people in my immediate environment. So just the ability to refocus and recenter what being kind and being human and loving yourself and having a meaningful life is all about. I think that it was very, very needed at that time, and it still is. I think that for young people, we often forget that there are reasons to be alive, especially when we have a lot of things stressing us out and a lot of things impacting our mental health. It was important for me that I was able to kind of focus our lenses on something that we are able to look forward to, such as sharing a story or having important conversations. So being able to focus on mental health and being able to create conversations surrounding mental health has been super important to me after losing my best friend to suicide and after seeing how many young people are affected by mental illness or affected by not taking care of their mental health every single day.
Just want to repeat what you said, because it's really stark how four high schoolers within a month committed suicide in the small city of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
That must have been absolutely like waves through the community.
Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a difficult time for high school students, the city of Winnipeg, and our communities for sure. And I guess the one question that really struck me that I had so many times throughout that month was, how come we didn't hear about it in schools? How come, even though it didn't happen at your school, that teachers aren't acknowledging it? Because they definitely know what's happening, but they aren't acknowledging it. They aren't talking about it. And you had those few teachers that I'm super, super grateful for that talked about it, that said maybe you knew them, maybe you're related to them, maybe you had friends who were friends with them, maybe your friends were relatives with them. And it's just acknowledging that in such a small community that we all have heard of that person or know someone that knows that person, or there's just some way that we're all connected. So I think the whole concept of it's not my school, it doesn't matter to me, or it's not my life, it doesn't matter to me, being able to shift that mentality to be like, okay, when you get to save one person from suicide, you're saving the whole community from hurt. And I think that's something that we need to remember going forward, especially within the school system, within our families, and within our friends, for sure.
And of course, there's no one main reason why someone might have poor mental health or might die by suicide. But you've mentioned a few things, including maybe having a lot of comparisons and not feeling fulfilled in your life because you are comparing with other people, particularly through social media. And that's definitely like a millennial and Gen Z problem at the moment.
Yeah. And the way I put it too is when you're scrolling on social media, you're comparing the lowest parts of your life to the apex of another person's. And you know yourself that you put forward your best foot on social media too, but you still fall for the other things that other people post too, thinking like, oh my God, this is amazing all the time. When you know yourself that you're only posting the best moments of your life too. But we somehow get stuck in this whole loop. We're like, okay, my life isn't as good as this person's perceiving it to be. Like, this person looks like this. I don't look like this. This person's traveling. I don't have money to travel. And you also missed out on this whole backstory as to how they got there and how you ended up where you are.
Yeah.
All our feeds look the same for the most part. All of our feeds look like we're happy, we're doing fun things, we're spontaneous, we're adventurous, all these things, and that we're always up for life. Not a lot of us will have pictures of us laying in bed like we just woke up or like explaining that we had a bad day. So I think that social media aspect definitely does have a large impact on mental health. And there's a lot of studies about it as well, but I'll leave that for another time.
Well, I'm really glad that that's something that people are starting to recognize, sort of the negative impacts. Obviously, there are a lot of positive impacts to social media and staying connected with friends and wider networks online. But there are also negative impacts. I think the big one is comparison. I'm so glad that people are waking up to this and talking about it. At least for like my age group and my peer circle, it is hitting the mainstream. Like, people have an understanding of how comparing your life to other people's highlight reel can have a really negative impact on your mental health. Another reason you said that mental health may be prevalent through society is because we're not talking about it. So you found that your school wasn't talking about it, even though it was so prevalent in your age group and in your community. But then also, I think it's important to remember that not everyone has a mental illness, but everyone has mental health.
Yep.
Like, just like physical health, you can be in good health or poor health, and that's the same with mental health. How did you find starting the conversation, particularly within your Filipino community?
Filipino community is very caring. They're very hospitable. They're very optimistic. They're very kind. However, there is that cultural gap between Filipino Canadians, for example, and Filipinos back home, or Filipino Canadians and Filipino immigrants to Canada who have not fully immersed themselves in Canadian culture yet. And in the Philippines, mental health is not widely talked about. It's something that is still very, very taboo. And it's a difficult conversation to have because a lot of Filipinos within my family and Filipinos that I know, mental health is sort of like a myth. It's true or it's not true.
What do you mean by that?
For example, it's like up for debate. So it's like, is depression real? Maybe, but like, maybe you'll get a Filipino that says yes, but you'll also have a Filipino that says, I don't believe in that. That is true. Like it's some mystical creature. So it's kind of a tough pill to swallow sometimes when you have to realize that there's people within your immediate surroundings that just don't understand mental health yet. And no matter what amount of education or conversation that it seems like they're stuck on that one concept that is just not real. So I face that a lot for sure, but we're definitely becoming more open to the conversation, which is an awesome first step. And I think it's more about for young people, like we have to do our part to ensure that future generations are able to talk about mental health and are able to have these conversations and doing our part to make sure that it's a sustainable conversation, that once we grow old, that there's still going to be young people talking about mental health and that it's less stigmatized and less taboo. But the Filipino community and a lot of immigrant families, for sure, the concept of mental health is very foreign. I had a one experience where I had a young girl who was a refugee from Syria tell me that she's never heard the word mental and health together in one sentence before. So when you hear that, you think about refugees who have definitely, for the most part, gone through some trauma, but don't have the resources or don't have the knowledge to acknowledge it as trauma or impacts on their mental health. So there's definitely that cultural barrier sometimes that stops us from talking about mental health, but it's definitely something that I look forward to continue to tackle because it is an important conversation, but it's definitely just something different. It's not like talking to young people about mental health. It's more of talking to older, more traditional parents and grandparents about mental health. And it's a conversation that needs to happen, but it's definitely a difficult one. And there's a lot of frustration for so many young people talking to their parents about mental health. And the one thing I can say to that is just keep trying, keep educating, keep talking about it. And even if your parents don't believe in mental health, there are people in your life that do, that want to help you and want to help you get better. So keep talking is all I can say.
Yeah. And I think that's a great message and something to really drive home, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there and maybe some people listening to this episode who find it very, very difficult to talk about mental health either for themselves or for someone that they know and care about, with their parents, with their grandparents or other people in their community. And that is prevalent among not just Asian communities, but immigrant communities, different diasporas. I think that's a really great point to drive home, that even if you don't feel heard, it's still worth talking about it and finding the people who will be able to support you, because that's really, really key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
You were also named by the Royal Bank of Canada one of the top 25 Canadian immigrants in 2018, which is amazing that they have a list like that. In Winnipeg, are there lots of different immigrant communities aside from the Filipino community that you're in?
I think the Filipino community is the largest one that we have. We have one of the highest Filipino populations in Canada, and it's been an awesome experience to be a Filipino Canadian in Winnipeg, to have this community, to have a family. Every family gathering I've had just grows even more and more every single year. Used to have Christmases in one person's home, and now we've rented out all, like a whole restaurant or a whole community center or a whole venue just to have these gatherings. So it's awesome to see that we have such amazing and strong Filipino immigrants in Winnipeg who have literally picked up their whole lives and come to a different country for a better life. So just seeing the resilience in Filipinos, seeing the resilience in everybody who immigrates to Canada, no matter what your cultural or ethnic background is, I think it's such a beautiful image to see such a diverse country.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And I've also heard that the Asian food in Canada is amazing. Oh. And one time I posted on Facebook saying, I'm going to go visit Asia. Where should I go in Asia? You know, I was just looking for travel recommendations on Facebook. And then one of my Canadian friends commented, Toronto.
I come to Toronto. Toronto is like, it's so diverse, like even more diverse than Winnipeg for sure. Like I've come across people with different ethnical backgrounds and are mixes of so many different things. And it's so cool to learn about other cultures and different ways of life that people have, even how their homes look, how they eat, what they eat, where they eat. Like it's an awesome thing to experience.
Something which I think we're both really passionate about is youth empowerment. And you're a great example of that and a great advocate for it as well, because you started doing activism when you were only 9. You created your own nonprofit when you were in your teens. And I think that really shows that young people have amazing power to make change, especially when they don't see it already happening. I think that's something that a lot of people still don't give enough respect to, because it is easy to get discriminated against because of not only your gender or other characteristics, but also because your age. Did you find any challenges with that when you were starting your activism work?
Oh yeah, like imagine a 9-year-old coming in and saying like, hey, like I want to do this, like bring me money, bring me food, bring me clothes so I can donate to the Philippines. Like it definitely was not, again, an orthodox thing where people were used to it, but I was super lucky to have administrators and teachers who were super supportive within my school, who were willing to get behind that activism and say, okay, like, let's do this. Like, this is going to be an awesome experience. So starting off when I was young, like, I think it was more of like an awesome experience for me. But as I got older and I realized that there were barriers because of my age. So fundraisers or events where people, I guess, kind of question my ability to do it successfully, let alone pull it off at all. I think we're definitely present in many ways. And then you throw in, like you said, being a woman in there, being an immigrant, being a person of color, you have that whole mix in there. And it doesn't always make for a good experience, but always does make for a lot of motivation to continue my work.
Yeah, that's so amazing. And of course, discrimination against age can come at lots of different ages, not only if you're 9, not only if you're a teenager, but also if you're in your 20s or even older, depending on the place where you're at, it's possible at any decade of your life to be discriminated by age, but shouldn't let that stop you. I'm a big believer that, you know, if you have ideas, you should push for them and create that change that you want to see. And there's a lot of strengths that I think young people have, which include things like recognizing problems or being able to see things from a different point of view, questioning why certain things are done a certain way, and whereas people who have been in perhaps a field for a little bit longer might be used to it or not question things in the same way that a young person would.
Mm-hmm. You are still you. Do not worry.
There's still lots of opportunity to achieve things at whatever age. And I think that's what I would love to see from, for example, like the magazine Time magazine, when they have their top 30 under 30. There are so many amazing people who are doing things at a young age, but then there's also a lot of amazing people who are doing things at an older age who still need to be celebrated as well. Mm-hmm. That's something I would definitely love to see. Do you have any words of advice for anyone listening who is frustrated by something in their community and wants to create a change, particularly if they're young?
I would say take that idea and run with it. I really do believe that there's no such thing as a change too small, and you can never be too young to make a change. So no matter what age you are, no matter where you are, no matter what circumstances you're handed, you possess the power to create social change. And remembering that through adversity and remembering that through every obstacle is going to be the most important thing that you can do for yourself and for your work. So just stay motivated, stay humble, stay working hard, and stay focused on your goal, which is creating positive social change.
That's like great motivation, really great motivation for anyone, whether you're 9 or 99. I think that's phenomenal. What would you recommend for someone who is looking to promote mental health in their peer circle, at their school, or in their community? What's a small step they could take? Not necessarily starting a nonprofit like yourself, but what's a small step that someone could take if they are passionate about promoting or improving mental health?
Start with yourself. Start with self-care. Start with self-love. Start with being honest about how you're doing. Start by helping yourself out. If you need it, reach out for that help. And then go to the next step of, okay, I'm good. Are the people around me good? Are there things that I'm missing? Are there things that I could be doing to help somebody else? Am I educated on mental health? Am I doing the most I can? I think those are the first two steps that I would encourage young people to do.
No, that's really great. And yeah, I always have to remind myself that I need to look after number one, first and foremost. One of my friends says, you need to look after your main bae, and your main bae is yourself.
Yeah.
What sorts of things do you do to practice self-care?
The one thing that I love doing is just sitting with my dogs.
Oh.
I think phone down, putting my computer down, especially like these days where I'm working 8 hours a day for one job and like 4 hours a day for another. Like I need to put down my phone and just chill with my dogs, take them for a walk, talk to friends if I need to. Just being able to disconnect myself and put myself in the present, I think is one of the best things that I've been able to do so far.
That's a really lovely one. Self-care is definitely important. And what I find challenging is that so many companies use self-care as a way to sell me things like face masks or bath bombs. And then I need to remember that actually I don't need all of this stuff, and online shopping isn't really going to help me with anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that.
Well, you're a very inspirational, I don't like to say young woman because I hate it when people say that to me, just a very inspirational person who is also a young woman, a person of colour, an immigrant, and someone of Southeast Asian diaspora. So well done on all your achievements. And it definitely seems like the hustle hasn't stopped for you as you're working full-time and part-time, as well as doing your advocacy and activist work as well. So inspiring, very motivating.
Thank you.
Just wanted to end the conversation with one last question. What is something that you're grateful for at the moment?
I'm grateful to be home. I think that's the one thing I've been grateful for the most. I've been able to save money. I've been able to focus on myself. I've been able to wake up to a table with food, with laundry done, with everything done. I've never experienced this before since I left university. So being able to be back home, having my parents and my family around, having my dogs around is definitely something I'm grateful for. And I've had friends from other cities who left to go to school there who are now back home. So now for the first time ever, we're all in the same city at the same time, which is super nice, even though we can't see each other that much. It's nice to even just go on a walk like once a week or something. So I'm really grateful to be home.
Kind of a silver lining, because you didn't expect for your university semesters to suddenly finish and to go home, but actually it's been a real sort of blessing, a silver lining out of it. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing, Louisa. And thank you for everything you shared in this conversation. Being able to speak so openly about your story takes a lot of courage. Even though I know you do it a lot, I still think it takes a lot of courage. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Where can people find you online?
People can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Louisa Aquino, or they can go to my website, which is louisaaquino.com. So send me a message, phone me to book a call, let me know. I'd love to hear from anybody.
And I'll put Louisa's social media links as well as the link to her website in the show notes below.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Louisa really is incredible and I'm so grateful to her. Have her guest on Yellow Bee Pod. Later this week, I'm actually going to be going back into the office for the first time since I started working from home back in March for the start of lockdown. I'm going to be sharing some of my experiences with lockdown due to COVID-19 this year in my next episode. So make sure you are subscribed and I'll catch you next time. It's been your girl, Natalie, and bye!